I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
Dave and Dejanovic.
All right, here we go.
A new conversation on KSL News Radio 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Dave and I have both been covering news in the Utah market for 55 years between the two of us, and neither one of us has ever seen video in a moment like this unfold.
Debbie, my heart is still absolutely just pounding out of my chest right now as I watched Trooper Ruben Correa commit the most heroic act I've ever seen in my life.
I still have chills just remembering back 30 minutes ago when I watched the dash cam video pour into the KSL News Radio studios and listen to the moments before the train in the Centerville area, it was a front runner train, was about to hit a car that had somehow landed on the tracks. We are watching the video right now on our KSL News Radio app. We are watching Trooper Correa jump from his patrol car, run up an embankment to the train tracks above, and then walk down the embankment without trying to slip down that embankment. He has seconds because you can see the light from the train. It's 6:50 this morning, barreling down on the car, and he's yelling at the driver to get out.
Let's go, get out of here. We got a train coming. We got a train coming. We got a train coming.
And seconds after he gets the driver out safely and they roll down the embankment, bam, the train hits the car.
Debbie, as I'm watching this, I've watched this video probably 100 times so far, but I'm trying to count. By the time I see him remove him from the car and clear, I start counting. I can't get to two. I can't get to two before the front runner train crashes into that car and obliterates it.
We have Utah Transit Authority spokesperson Carl Arkey on hold on the line waiting to get live with us here. But before we do, and I know Carl will understand why we want to play this clip from Trooper Correa. He just held a news conference just a short while ago. And here's what he had to say about being a major hero of the morning and the Utah's newest Superman.
I was observing there was a car on top of the tracks. I notified dispatch. At that point, I got out of my vehicle, ran up to the driver, and I observed there was a driver still in the vehicle. I saw he was unconscious, so I opened his door, explained to him we got to get out. He wasn't responding, and then I heard the horn from a train. I looked to my left, and I was able to observe that train was coming pretty fast, anywhere between 50 and 80 miles an hour. So at that point, I was a little bit concerned about that. I got the driver out of there. It seemed he was having a possible unknown medical condition at that point. And just before I knew, that train hit that vehicle, and we were able to make it out alive at that point.
Debbie, I've been more nervous ordering a Big Mac. Trooper Correa is such a cool cat. This is unreal to watch this happen and unfold. As he is walking up the embankment, he is staring directly at the front-runner train. He is staring at that singular light barreling down the tracks. The car is sitting on the tracks. There's an individual inside, and he just reaches in, pulls him out. 1 second later, the train crashes into the car.
Let's bring Carl Arkey. He's Utah Transit Authority spokesperson on the line with us live. Good morning, Carl. What a morning.
Whew. You could say that about 100 times. What an amazing story, and what an amazing trooper.
Have you seen the dash cam video that UHP
I have not seen
has
it
released
yet, but I will be going to take a look at it after we get done talking. And I knew from what I had been told that it was the closest of calls, and that whoever had pulled out that passenger, and we didn't know what the situation was involving the driver of that vehicle. I only found out recently that he may have had some medical condition, which is what the trooper just alluded to. But know why the car was there. We didn't receive notification that the car was on the tracks until seconds before they made visual contact with the car, and then made contact with the car. So there was really no way for the train to slow down. And that's an area where it's traveling at a high rate of speed. And so the stars aligned, the gods were smiling, and we've got a happy story to talk about today.
Yeah, it truly is. How fast does the Frontrunner travel?
It can get up to 79 miles per hour top speed. So the Trooper is probably accurate. It was probably somewhere between 50 and 70 miles per hour, somewhere like that. So, yeah, and at that speed, as most people know, I think, it takes about a mile for the train to slow down and stop.
That's incredible, because
that's if you throw it into emergency braking.
Is that what they did? Did they throw it in emergency braking? Because
I'm sure that they did. Once they saw, and I haven't had a chance to talk with our Frontrunner people yet, but excuse me. But I'm sure if he was leaning on the horn the way the Trooper was describing it, he was well aware that there was a car on the track, and obviously the train operator doesn't know what the circumstances are. And so their protocol and their procedure is you blow that horn as long and as loud as you can, and you throw it into emergency braking. But it's still going to take a mile before that train's going to stop.
Yeah, it was incredible. You can hear it, you can see it. And then shortly after the train makes contact with the car, it does stop. You see the train stop. How is the UHP conductor doing right now?
The UTA.
Yeah,
the conductor for the train.
UTA operator.
Yeah.
No injuries, but, you know, I'm sure, you know, that's something that will shake anybody up. And
yes.
Most of our operators are trained veterans, but still, that's, you know, that's something that, you know, rattles the nerves. And so we have people who will sit down with them, talk with them, assess their mental state. And if they need some time off, they'll be given time off. And we won't let them come back until they're ready to come back and that they've been checked out. So, you know, that's something that, you know, nobody wants to see. And you know, the unusual part about this is that now we've had in, what, the last year, a little over a year, we've had two vehicles leave I-15, not at exactly the same spot, but in the same vicinity there. And I think last year with the semi-tractor-trailer rig, there were cables there, but they were insufficient to keep it from getting onto the alignment. And then today I understand he hit a highway speed sign, bounced off of that, went through a chain link fence, and then up an embankment. In fact, our people were surprised that the car had enough velocity and speed to be able to get up the embankment and get on the track.
Yeah,
so,
Carl, I was wondering about that because I'd heard in the newsroom before we jumped in studio here for the show that there had been a traffic accident that sort of preceded this individual ending up in his car on the train tracks in the Centerville area. And so do you think it was some sort of a medical emergency or medical condition that somehow ended up in a traffic accident and then catapulted his car onto the tracks? Is that what you're hearing?
I don't know. And that would be a question for UHP, but I understand the preliminary report that I just got a little while ago is that it may have been a medical condition, may have been a seizure, whatever it is. And you know, a year ago, I think the truck driver fell asleep at the wheel and bounced off the center median, went across all the lanes of traffic, hit a pole, bounced off of that, and then went through those cables, which were insufficient to keep the truck from getting close to the tracks. So, you know, maybe it's something that, I'm not sure whose ballpark that falls into.
Yeah.
Maybe there needs to be better protection along I-15 there to make sure that vehicles, if there is an accident, don't go up the embankment and don't get onto the tracks.
Carl Arkey, thank you so much for joining us from UTA. And honestly, I was as shocked as anybody to think that that car could go up that embankment, because that is a steep embankment. So the fact that the car had crashed, hit some things, dropped into a ditch, went up the embankment, and settled right on the tracks, that is incredible that everything went wrong right up to the moment that Trooper Correa saved that individual's life. An incredible story. What so many layers to it, and we're just unpacking it the more we find out it.
We're continuing to follow that story with our team of reporters and producers, keeping an eye on that very closely throughout the morning and throughout the day right here on KSL News Radio. Of course, you can jump onto our KSL News Radio Facebook page and see that video for yourself. Next, high school coaches. Our next discussion is all about you. You still practice the man-up culture and make kids play with the concussion? Let's talk it out. Let's tell you what it'll cost you next.
Dave and Dujanovic. Get all news all morning, then go in-depth about the news.
Live with Greg Skordis. He's a former prosecutor. We're talking about an adoption scheme.
With Dave and Debbie.
These adoptive parents could lose their child.
That's exactly what could happen.
News at 5, talk at 9 on KSL News Radio, Utah's news station. Dave and Dujanovic.
Well, it is a lawsuit. That should be a warning to all high school football coaches in Utah, Dave. Get over your man-up style of coaching. A former high school football player suing Cache County School District, accusing his former coach of telling him to man up and keep playing after he got a concussion.
Yeah, this is a... I'm torn. I'm really, really torn on this, Debbie. I think that this is going to be a very interesting conversation. We're going to delve into the details of this lawsuit. We're going to ask the district if they failed. And then it's going to be your turn to talk. Does the man-up culture in coaching still exist? Do we want that? If it does, we want specific examples of what you've seen in games and at practices.
Our number to call is 801-575-7668. KSL News Radio's John Wojcik breaks down the lawsuit for us, and then I've got more details because I've got the 15-page lawsuit in my hands right now.
A former football player at Ridgeline High School, Connor Finn, says he suffered serious injuries which have resulted in ongoing medical problems. He says the main problems stem from playing with a concussion after a coach told him to, quote, man up and get back out there. He has since reported periods of blackout and memory loss, along with personality change. According to the Salt Lake Tribune, he's now filed suit against the Cache County School District, its Board of Education, and the Utah High School Activities Association in the amount of at least $300,000. John Wojcik, KSL News Radio.
It's a culture, no question. It is a culture of coaches in general to tell kids to toughen up. Now, the balance is... There's a time when the coaches are right. There's a time when you've got to tell the kids, hey, you're all right. I know it hurts, but you're fine. Get back out there. You know, that's part of sports. And if you've played any level of sports where you've turned an ankle or fallen down or, you know, something happened where you can go out and you are fine. So if every time someone gets hurt, we just take them out of the game or we sit them down forever, that's not necessarily the right call in all circumstances. Now, has this gone too far? Yes. Is there a culture of taking it too far? Yes. But let's not throw out all coaches, and let's not condemn all coaches all at once.
Let's keep our eye on the ball here. We're talking about a concussion. We're not talking about a turned ankle. We're not talking about a stubbed toe. We are talking about a concussion. Let me walk you through more of the details, just kind of spinning off of John Wojcik's report about this individual case. It's happening in the Cache County area. The lawsuit just got filed. The situation actually occurred back in 2017. This Connor was a senior at Ridgeline High School. He says he was involved in a helmet-to-helmet hit with a teammate at practice. The lawsuit alleges that he complained to his coach that his head hurt, and he was aware of the concussion symptoms at the time, and the coach said, man up, quit being a, and I can't say the word, and then get back out there. This is according to the lawsuit that was just filed. So he continues playing. He goes to more practices and more games over the next couple of weeks. He gets more hits to the head, and the symptoms persist. Now, don't we know? I mean, wasn't there a movie about concussions? I mean, don't we know, based on protocols that have been in place for years now, that you're supposed to sit the player out, coach?
A human being will get concussed at 60 Gs. A common head-to-head contact on a football field? 100 G's. God did not intend for us to play football.
A common hit. It happens all the time. When we say helmet-to-helmet hit with a teammate in practice, that happens 1,000 times at every school. From a coach's standpoint, you have to understand they are dealing with 50, 80, 100 kids. And you're trying to run a practice, and it's difficult to manage that many people. I don't think people fully appreciate how difficult it is to be a coach. You have so many kids that you're taking care of. Do you remember every single conversation you have? Do you understand every single kid's health? No, it would be impossible. You try your best. You do your best. That being said, have some coaches taken it too far? 100% yes.
We've got so many more details to get through on this lawsuit, including the district's response that we got here at KSL News Radio when we called them yesterday about it. According to the lawsuit, another coach did approach him because he didn't look well. So this was a couple of weeks later in the training room, Dave. Connor did not look well. He's a football player. He said he sustained a concussion, told his football coach. That coach told him to man up, get back in the game, or get back out there. Then another coach sees him, and he tells him about the situation. And that coach, it says it right in the lawsuit, takes action. So somebody knew what to do in this circumstance at that high school. So what's happened since? Well, according to the lawsuit, he's had several emergency calls. He's had ambulance rides. He's had hospital stays. He's been kept out of school for months. He still experiences symptoms. This happened in 2017. And now he's seeking damages of $300,000. $300,000, which I would think a lot of families would be going after a lot more money than $300,000. It sounds to me as though he's trying to cover his medical bills and anything else that he might have to sustain over the next several years dealing with the repercussions of having a concussion and going back in the game.
The problem I have with blaming any one individual is ultimately you're responsible for your health. As a football player, myself and my son played football, who, oddly enough, Debbie, his career ended from a concussion. The very last game Cole ever played, he had a concussion and he never went back. I know what this is. I know how scary it is. I know the headaches, the nausea. I know all of these things from firsthand experience, both myself and with my son. So ultimately what happens is you put as many things in place as you can. You put in policies and procedures to say, ultimately, you have to tell me, football player, are you good enough to play? Are you feeling okay? Do you have symptoms? And once you are without symptoms, I think, at least at my school, you had to go another week or two symptom-free before you could play. So, but it does send a message, doesn't it? It sends a message to coaches right now about the man-up mentality.
And you cannot tell me, Dave, that one high school football player is going to make or break a game. Let's get live next with NFL, former NFL and U quarterback, and KSL News Radio talk show host Scott Mitchell. I want to ask if coaches still ignore this concussion rule that we've had in place for years and if the man-up culture still exists in high school.
Dave and Dujanovic get all news all morning, then go in-depth about the news.
Live with Greg Skordis. He's a former prosecutor. We're talking about an adoption scheme.
With Dave and Debbie.
These adoptive parents could lose their child.
That's exactly what could happen.
News at 5, talk at 9 on KSL News Radio, Utah's news station. Dave and Dujanovic.
All right, here we go.
A new conversation on KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
This hour, we're taking a deep dive into this. It's a lawsuit filed by a former high school football player out of the Cache County area, suing the Cache County School District and the High School Athletic Association for about $300,000. He says a coach told him to man up, get back on the field after he got a concussion.
Yeah, and this is something that I have probably done as a coach, Debbie. Maybe not with it. Well, I don't know. I don't want to say never, but I can tell you this. This is pretty common for coaches to tell kids to, hey, get out on the field. You all right? Are you feeling okay? Okay, then get out on the field. Because games are moving so fast. It's happening so quickly. There's all these conversations going. So it's not a crazy story because I've seen it firsthand. I've heard about it. So I guess it doesn't surprise me that some sort of lawsuit has come of this to address this issue specifically.
And in the next segment, we want to hear from our listeners, Dave. I really want to know if this man up culture still exists out on the field in the high schools. 801-575-7668. I'm looking for specific examples in the next segment. We want to play your best phone calls on the air. Since 2013, there has been a concussion protocol in place. They talk about that in the lawsuit that this former high school football player filed because of the concussion that he got, said he was told to man up and get back out there, and then sustained more head injuries. This 2013 protocol is very clear. It says you got to basically pull kids out of the game if they can't play. When KSL News Radio, we contacted the Cache County School District about this lawsuit yesterday. They didn't want to comment specifically about the lawsuit, said they were aware of it, but that they did indicate that all coaches and assistants are trained and they're required to follow those baseline concussion testing protocols and techniques. That, of course, will continue to unfold. Their side of the story will continue to unfold as this case winds its way through the courts.
Joining us now on the show is the host of KSL's Unrivaled. You can hear Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery from 7 to 9 every night. But Scott, thanks for joining us. Everybody knows Scott, but in case you don't and you're just joining us, Scott played here in Utah in high school football, played at the University of Utah, one of the all-time greats, played in the NFL. And to top it off, as the expert of experts, he's been a high school football coach. So, Scott, thank you so much for joining us for this conversation.
No, happy to. Thanks.
How do you feel about this this idea that a kid is suing a coach because he told him to, quote-unquote, man up?
So I'm sure that this situation probably happened. I understand it. I grew up in a culture where, you know, it's smelling salts and you're never injured, you never show weakness. So I get all of that. When I went back to coach high school football, my main objective was to be an influence in these young men's lives because I had so many great coaches who had done that for me. And the challenge that I ran into and the challenge I think everyone runs into is You can really learn life lessons from sports, and so how do you create this toughness? Because things in life are kind of hard sometimes, and we talk about, you know, I can do hard things, and I can overcome challenges, and I can overcome struggles, and you can get that from sports. But the challenge is being able to do it without injuring someone. And I can tell you, when I coached, I was hypersensitive about the issue of concussions. And I got an education on it. And fortunately for me, where I coached, we had a great support staff. Our athletic training department was amazing. And we had great protocols in place and procedures. And I never took it lightly as far as head injuries and concussions. I was over cautious about it. But I still want to create a culture where you can find out more about yourself when you do hard things and you push through certain things. And so it's a fine balance.
But, Scott, aren't concussions kind of off limits when it comes to pushing kids out onto the field? I mean, don't we know by now?
Well,
I think
no
the
question.
Protocol's been in place since 2013. So I'm wondering, do you think this culture still does exist across Utah in high school sports?
I would be shocked if it did. I'm not saying that it doesn't. My son is playing high school football. He got hit in a game and they pulled him out. And I saw where they have, you know, 9 helmets of kids who are having head issues. And from what I've understood, and I'm not the complete expert on this, but I have spoken to people who are. And one of the really major concerns is the secondary concussion issues with young people. And that's where serious problems happen. So if there's any kind of question, any kind of concern, absolutely they should be pulled out, and it should be immediate. And this player shouldn't even be allowed to return. That's why they take their helmets. But they shouldn't even be allowed to return until they've gone through the proper protocols. And there's an outstanding procedure, and there's this, you know, tremendous awareness of how to handle concussions, and a lot of it is educating coaches and parents and the players, and there's great information out there. But you need people in these schools who are the trained health professionals, whether it's an athletic trainer or another health professional, to really monitor this and take away the emotion of a coach who's, you know, it's like, because we're all competitive as coaches and we want to win and all this stuff. And you just don't want to ever put in a position like what happened in Cache Valley, where you could be compromised.
KSL Unrivaled, Scott Mitchell, thank you so much for joining us, Scott. Great insight. And Debbie, this story is unfortunately a common story. There is this delicate balance, and I don't think people fully understand how difficult it is to be a high school coach where you're dealing with 50 to 100 kids. And this is perhaps part of the misconception. People think that concussions happen from helmet-to-helmet contact. Well, it certainly can, but you can also get a concussion by just landing hard on the turf. You can get that whiplash. You can do it from a million different ways that doesn't necessarily seem like that head-to-head collision train wreck that we're thinking of. So it may not be as obvious. You can get a concussion by getting hit square in the chest and landing on the ground hard. So you may not think, oh, he got a concussion because the kid can't breathe because his chest is dying, right? So it's a very, very complicated thing. But I love the awareness. I think we've made great strides in football to be more aware of what's going on with head injuries.
Well, it's not just football. It's lacrosse. It's softball. It's baseball.
And soccer.
I guess it could even happen in tennis. Do you believe the man-up culture still exists with our high school coaches? 801-575-7668. I tell you right now, our phone lines are lighting up. We're already getting phone calls on this. Tell us about your experience with the high school coach. Did they tell your son or daughter to man up and get back in the game?
Dave and Dujanovic.
It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLpodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.